court will proceed to the third case of the day, United States versus Fight. Ms. LaFever?
May it please the court, good morning, Your Honor. I'm afraid we're really going to change the subject of from the previous appeals that this court has heard this morning. The instant appeal involves the application by lower court judge Rudy Lozano of three sentencing enhancements in a case where the appellant pled guilty to interstate transportation of a minor for the purpose of engaging in a sexual act. The three sentencing enhancements that are the subject of the instant appeal are the abduction enhancement, the enhancement for vulnerable victim, and a two-time enhancement for the age of the victim. The net effect of these enhancements by Judge Lozano was to sentence the offender who pled guilty and was responsible for a basic consensual federal statutory rape case to the same level as a person who violently and forcefully raped a victim who was mentally deficient or had been mentally abused or physically abused in the past. Mr. Beef was sentenced at the same level that the most violent sexual predator would be sentenced at as a result of these enhancements. Number one issue, the abduction enhancement. And I'll refrain from citing all the actual numbers unless the court wishes me to, because they're so confused, they're so long, they're cited in the brief. The abduction enhancement. Now, in order to receive a four-level enhancement for abduction, an individual needs to be, the Black's Law Dictionary definition of abduction is to lead someone away by force or fraudulent persuasion. It is undisputed. There is no issue in this case that there was no force. Appellee agrees with that. The issue is the appellee contends that there was, this is a case of inveigling or grooming. And inveigling is defined as fraudulent persuasion. Very briefly, I won't go into the facts because they're in the brief, but very briefly, this case involves a 28-year-old principal of a Christian day school who became infatuated over a four-month period, fell in love with an 11-year-old student who had mutual feelings, and on May the 1st, they left and went across four states together. Now, obviously, let there be no issue as to the fact that this is perverse, bizarre, and...
With regard to the abduction, if she were, say, five, then anything of this sort would have to be abduction, right? Because a five-year-old wouldn't know what was going on, right?
Well, I think that if she were five, one could argue perhaps there would be more merit to the vulnerable victim
victim. I'm talking about abduction. That it wouldn't be meaningful to say that a five-year-old had voluntarily gone to have, you know, Las Vegas to have sex with someone, would it?
No, it wouldn't, Your Honor. However,
that would be a good example, wouldn't it? Abduction that's not actually violent, but it's based on a mental situation of the victim.
Well, I guess that gets to the issue of the amount of force that's used to overcome another person's will. So perhaps in that regard, the age could be considered. However, the issue that I believe the lower court judge confused here is the issue of legal consent. And as I was about to say, this is a crime because of the age of the victim in this case. But for the age of the victim, what happened here wouldn't be a crime, and we wouldn't be here today.
No, if she were 17, it would still be a crime, wouldn't it?
18, or 8, right. If she were over 18, there would be
no
crime here. But The issue
is... If she hadn't been 11, there wouldn't be a crime.
I'm sorry. I meant if she had been over the age of 18, there would be no crime here. And the distinction is between the 5-year-old and the 11-year-old in this case, I believe, is that there is no... In this case, it was absolutely no trickery.
Yeah, but there was certainly gentle urging or flattery. I mean, when we look at it, it's certainly an atmosphere was created to have the victim become dependent and comfortable enough to leave voluntarily with him. I mean, spending a lot of time. He gave her special privileges at school, allowing her to spend time in his office and giving her passes when she was late. He videotaped her. He had these inappropriate conversations with her. He gave her a pendant and he gave her his watch, and he told her he would commit suicide if she left him.
Okay, now...
If that's not creating an atmosphere that's kind of gentle urging or flattering her, which qualifies as inveigling, I don't know what inveigling is.
Okay, well, first of all, with regard to the last assertion, that is that he would commit suicide if he left her, that occurred way after the crime was committed. They had already reached the fourth state, and that was not part of any grooming or flattery or any threats or coercion. That happened after the fact, as they were about to be arrested. Furthermore, the problem here is that this decision ignores the psychological testimony here. It wasn't a deliberate, it wasn't fraudulent deception, and that's what this court needs to focus on. The two psychological experts, the defense's Dr. Caruana and the government's Dr. Pete, both reports go to the fact that the feelings on the part of the appellant were genuine. As perverse as it may seem, he honestly believed in his love for the victim.
I don't think that's relevant, actually. I don't think his motive is relevant. He might abduct someone forcibly because he was in love with her.
The court focuses on this court's precedent, Romero, there needs to be a deliberate fraudulent deception. Otherwise, it's not
irrelevant
vaguely.
To what the nature of his feelings for her. He may still use fraud. That's pretty common in the courtship process.
Well, but that's the point, that if his feelings are genuine, he's not using fraud.
That's not true.
Well, if he honestly...
I don't see the connection.
Well, the connection is this. If you look at this court's precedent in Romero, which was an egregious case involving fraudulent deception and making misrepresentations...
What if he's in love with her, but he knows that she'll be concerned about running away with him, so he tells her, well, if you run away with me, I'll give you $1 million.
Okay.
So it has a fraud, even though the feelings were genuine.
But this court can't base its opinion on facts not in the record, and none of that occurred in this case. And the point is, there was no fraudulent deception. He honestly loved her and discussed a future together with her. And in fact, if you follow
But all you're saying is, there isn't fraud in the sense that he's made false promises, but the nature of his feelings for her is unconnected to Judge Williams' point, which is that he employed, you know, blandishments and spent time with her and so on in order to prepare the way for a relationship.
Well, and I think this court's precedent requires something more than spending time, and I would ask Appellee to cite a single case or to cite precedent for spending a substantial amount of time with a person as a basis for an abduction enhancement. In fact, to the contrary, they spent time together. However, all of the initiation of the activity was made by Ms. Marshall on numerous occasions, and this can be found at Government's Exhibit A, page 234. She comes to his cabin on every occasion. She's the one that asks if she takes her shirt off, could they have sex. She comes on each and every occasion. It is she who comes and requests this, and he initially resists. Now, the feeling that he spends time with her, and I submit that in order to invoke this enhancement, there needs to be some precedent that spending substantial amounts of time constitutes an abduction, because otherwise this court would be making an automatic enhancement. Either you're
well, it's her age that's critical, right?
Well,
she's 16 or something like that. Yes, your argument would be
And that's
horrible.
Why it's a crime. And that's
no, but it's a crime at 16 also, right?
But this is an abduction enhancement,
that's
not
right.
Her age.
I know, but if she were 16, there would still be a crime.
It would be a crime, and that's...
You wouldn't have an abduction scenario, because at 16, you know, she's much more responsible for her own act. But at 11, you're...
And that's why there is an additional enhancement in the guidelines for age, and it's improper to base it an abduction enhancement on age. And I believe there's
So your bottom line is inveigling can only be trickery.
Trickery.
Gentle urging or flattery, that wouldn't be a proper basis for implying.
Exactly, because flattery is part of normal human sexual behavior. I mean, either he forcibly abducts her and rapes her, or he's going to flatter her and make her feel special. As a human being, there's no other way, I don't think.
And gentle urging, does that fall into it? Would that be...
I submit that there's no evidence of gentle urging here. If in fact, she's the one that urged him. But if I might just move on, because I see my light to the vulnerable victim. Yeah. The vulnerable victim, Your Honors, also I cite the court to the Snyder and White cases in this circuit, where there were horrific tales of prior sexual abuse and rape and issues involving emotionally disturbed people in group homes, people on drugs. And that in this case, even though there's no requirement that the underlying conduct be proven up, in this case it was highly dubious, and appellant knew that and witnessed the mother even say, confront the husband and have the husband deny it and say that whatever happened here happened when he was drunk. I submit that under this court's precedent in Snyder and White, a possible one-time touching does not constitute a vulnerable victim. And under the precedent of Williams, the Ninth Circuit case, this type of prior history is typical for victims of Title 18, Section 2423B. It is not something so substantial or unusual that would make it constitute a vulnerable victim. And lastly, with regard to the double counting, it is clear that in this case, the appellant was enhanced a total of 7 points for the age of the victim. It is clear under the Morris precedent that but for the age, Section 2A3.2 would apply, base offense level 24. Then, pursuant to 2A3.2C1, goes up 3 points because it shifts over to Section 2A3.1, a base offense level of 27. Therefore, we have a 3-point enhancement for the age of the victim. Then again, under 3.1B2A, an additional 4-point enhancement for age of the victim. This court in Kotchever, 6th, 3rd, 12th, 18, which is cited in the brief, held that it is double counting where an individual is enhanced twice for the same conduct, and that case was even different, involved two different enhancements. This is so clear. Age under 12, 2 times. And then there's one case that is not cited in the brief, and I submit to you also.
Is this a new case you're bringing to our attention? Did you inform the other side?
No.
Well, you may submit it, but you'll have to do it by way of letter and inform the
United States versus John 309 Fed Third 298 involved also double counting for age of the victim. The cases cited by the appellant only involve a one-time enhancement for age of the victim. None of them involve a two-time.
Thank you. Ms. Berkowitz.
Your Honor, something that the court seemed to hit on, which is very important in its analysis, is that there is a subjective component in analyzing whether or not the abduction enhancement should apply under 2A3.1. That subjective component is the thought process, what's in the head of the victim. And therefore, it's very important. And
can you imagine a case in which an 11-year-old would not, under your approach, be a victim of induction?
Yes, Your Honor, I can.
Abduction. what would that be?
For example, if a parent or a guardian took a child across a state line and engaged in sexual activity with that child, and there was nothing else. It was a trip. Maybe to go to a summer home. That would not be inveigling. We're not talking about a forcible act. We acknowledge it was no
force. But what leads up to the sex?
The parent or guardian initiates the contact with the child.
Do you have to be more concrete?
A molestation does not require seduction necessarily, Your Honor.
No, but look, that's the question. If rape is one thing, seduction is something else, what's in between?
Molestation.
Well, that's just a word, right?
The simple act of sex.
The point is, what is your conception of, the question is, what is your conception of abduction? Now, if the parent, it seems to me that your abduction thing is just sort of buttering up the victim. Now, in your parent example, the parent takes the child across state lines on what the child thinks is an ordinary trip. Now, how does the parent then initiate the sexual activity? It's not rape. That would be separate. So what does the parent do? Isn't it going to be the same butter? If the parent wants voluntary sex with the 11-year-old child, doesn't he have to say something to her?
What the parent says to the child is not necessarily going to be seduction, as it is.
What
in
is it going to be?
That I'm entitled. That this is right, that this is appropriate.
Well, that sounds like, that's obviously to say I'm entitled. That would be a good example of fraud.
Yes.
So why wouldn't that be inveigling?
That's not what causes the child to go with the parent. The child goes with the parent because, let's say, it's a trip that has been planned. There's no coercion, there is no coercive persuasion involved in getting that child across the state line with the parent to engage in the sexual activity.
But I thought the girl here was the one who wanted to run away when he decided to flee the jurisdiction. I thought she wanted to come along.
The girl was not forced to come along. The government acknowledges that. She did come along voluntarily, but she came along, Your Honor.
How is it different from your child case?
It's different, Your Honor. Because in this case, there was a subduction leading up to that point. If I may, Your Honor, this is a long process.
You're saying the subduction has to precede the taking the child across the state line? Is that it?
In order for it to be coercive persuasion and inveigling, yes. This case is not entirely dissimilar from the situation you have in Romero. In that case, Your Honor, the defendant was communicating via email with his victim, represented himself to be 15 years old, then later 20 years old. But eventually, the victim did meet the defendant, and it was clear that the defendant was a much older adult male. Nonetheless, that victim went with that adult male. He did so because one of the things that defendant did was attempt to drive a wedge between the victim and his parents by telling the victim that his parents didn't care about him. That is not entirely dissimilar to what is going on or what went on in this case, in the grooming process, where the defendant drives a wedge between the victim and her parents by holding himself out to be the knight in shining armor, to protect her, to help her in the situation involving her family and the problems that are going on, in seducing her, making her feel, this child who is 11 years old, who is on the cusp of adolescence, that she is sexually desirable, but he cannot help himself. He is compelled to pursue her. These are the reasons why this child goes with the defendant. That is coercive.
What if she were 14? Would it be the same case?
Not necessarily, no, Your Honor. Because one of the things you have to look at is the age of the child and what her thought process is and how she processes this information. Information within the pre-sentence report, which is uncontroverted by defendant, comes from the treating psychiatrist of this victim. And she talks about how this is an 11-year-old child. She is not a sexual sophisticate. She is an 11-year-old child who brings to the table an 11-year-old child approach to the world and her understanding of this sexual pursuit by this adult male. She is not sophisticated. She is a child. She's on the cusp of adolescence. She's just beginning to develop her sexuality. She's very flattered by this.
What I'm talking about is he didn't soften her up because he had some scheme of taking her out of Indiana.
Well, I think if you take a look at the fact and...
Does that matter? Maybe that doesn't matter.
Well, it does, Your Honor, because even before he takes her, there is this sexual seduction. It's not just emotional.
But that's not the abduction, right? The abduction is when he drives her away in the truck.
It is not, but that is what also draws this, or binds this child to him. That they are meant to be together, but this is appropriate, this is good, this is right to be an 11-year-old child with her 29-year-old principal.
It says that he met her when she was 8. What led up to, I mean, this, you talked about this seduction, what was going on between 8 and 11?
Well, she leaves the school for a very brief period of time and returns around the age of 11. And as is indicated in the facts of the government's brief, it is after the defendant becomes aware of the allegation of inappropriate contact in the home between the father and the victim that he pursues this child. That goes to the issue of vulnerable victim. But certainly this defendant is aware of what's going on, and he pursues this child aggressively, and he pursues her and gains her trust and gains her willingness to go with him. This is coercive persuasion. This is not any different than the case of Romero.
Well, Douglas, you ask us to focus on the psychiatrist. I think you mentioned that.
Yes, Your Honor.
So in response to, as I understand your response to Judge Posner, when he asked you about a 14-year-old, I think he says a different case. Are you prepared to say that it isn't because she's 11, it's because of this specific 11-year-old? Is that what you want to say? Because are you arguing to us that in another case an 11-year-old might be able to resist?
Frankly, Your Honor, I would find it hard to believe that an 11-year-old, although maybe there might be.
That's going to make right. a third enhancement, right? Third age enhancement.
No, Your Honor, because it's not.
If you only take the position that it is per se abduction to take an 11-year-old, then in every one of these abduction cases, there'll be a third enhancement. There's two for just her age, and a third for abduction, but abduction goes with her age, you're suggesting.
No, I'm not, Your Honor. And as I indicated earlier, I do not agree that in every instance that enhancement will apply.
So your answer is there could be an 11-year-old.
There could be.
Well, what would that case be like?
That could be the parent, Your Honor, that takes his 11-year-old child across the state line and engages in sex. It's a standard trip, a family trip, and there is a sexual act.
So it's your family case again. It's hard to envisage with a stranger.
Well, it could be a family friend, Your Honor, that has permission to take the child. That also goes to the issue of parental consent. The parents did not give this defendant, nor did the child perceive that she had the permission of the parents to travel. This was something that she did because she had been coercively persuaded.
Well, we have to find it in this case, right?
We have to find it in this case.
We cannot be thinking to the next case.
Absolutely.
We cannot set an age, an automatic, because of age, right?
You cannot. That's absolutely correct. Because in Romero, that child was older. Although that child did have serious emotional problems. I believe the child was ADD. We don't have an emotionally disturbed child in this case. We have an emotionally abused child, but certainly there are other factors that this court stated on the record that it based its decision on as far as using the abduction enhancement. Age was only one of those factors.
I'm troubled by the vulnerable victim enhancement because it's hard to imagine a case, a normal child, you know, with a good home and so on, 11-year-old, is not going to engage in this sort of behavior with her principal. So isn't the victim, the 11-year-old, going to be as vulnerable as this person?
No. If someone takes a child off the street, takes them across the state line, they don't know the child, they have no idea what their background is, how would the vulnerable victim enhancement apply? In this case, however,
before they crossed the state line, they had a conversation, and the child disclosed in a 20-minute conversation before crossing the state line, that they had a difficult home life, not unlike what we have here. So that would that automatically say, gee, I've got somebody vulnerable, and then they cross the state line and conduct themselves as a
Well, if the court considers United States versus Newman, then perhaps. Because in that case, there was the solicitation or the, I'm trying to think of the appropriate word in that case, the defendant there hooked onto his victim fairly early on, and during the course of his being with that victim, she made that disclosure to him. Nonetheless, despite the fact that it was not immediate, that it was later on in his dealings with the victim, the vulnerable victim enhancement was applied in this case. In that case.
So back to when we were talking about the abduction. Isn't it almost impossible to conceive of a 29-year-old and an 11-year-old and not having a vulnerable 11-year-old?
No, not necessarily, Your Honor. Because vulnerable victim requires that the defendant knows something about that victim that makes them a particularly vulnerable target.
Yeah, but what's the age? How about the age? Let's just say age, 11 years old. I mean,
the vulnerable victim requires that if there is something, if the enhancement is taken care of in another provision, another guideline provision, you can't use it. There's
right.
no double counting with respect to the vulnerable victim.
So there has to be a conversation. Some fact related as to the background of the victim to the perpetrator to alert the perpetrator that he's literally possessed of a vulnerable victim.
That is correct.
And there's no minimums on that. It could be just a conversation saying that my father abused me or I'm a neglected child. Some general phrase along that line without specifics.
That would appear to be the case, but here, Your Honor, you have a principal who is made aware of the situation by the child. He then consults another teacher. There's a meeting where the principal is present.
There's a terrible element of fiction. Look, the reason for the enhancement is that, of course, 11-year-olds are vulnerable. That's the whole point. Children are vulnerable. That's why there are special laws for their protection. So you're kind of splitting hairs. You're saying, well, this 11-year-old is slightly less vulnerable than the next 11-year-old, but they're all vulnerable. That's the whole... I mean, it's almost as if you're getting four enhancements because she's 11.
No, Your Honor.
I think you're entitled to two, but you're getting four. Because once you have the 11-year-old showing it seems to be the very loose, you know, standard for enhancement, you get the abduction enhancement more or less automatically, and then you get the vulnerable victim.
But not all 11-year-olds are vulnerable or as vulnerable as this child is.
Yeah,
but
if you didn't have these facts, you'd still argue vulnerable victim. Say it's 11-year-old, she doesn't know what she's doing, he picked on her because she's 11, he wouldn't go after a 14-year-old because they're less vulnerable.
Your Honor, I wouldn't be able to get it under the analysis of under vulnerable victim analysis as it's articulated in the guidelines and case law, because that would be double counting. I am not seeking to ask this court to double count. What I'm asking this court
for double counting in 99% of the cases, and you're pointing to some exotic cases which have never arisen, in which yes, you might allow the seducer of the 11-year-old to avoid those two enhancements. But you could say, well, Congress would not have been thinking, the Sentencing Commission wouldn't have been thinking of those esoteric cases. The reason for the standard enhancement is 11-year-olds are vulnerable and don't have any real freedom of action.
But, Your Honor, do we not address the situation where it's here? You have a child who has disclosed very intimate, important, and potentially damaging information to her molester. Do you not punish the molester because he abused that and abused that information?
He's going to be punished. Anyone who goes after an 11-year-old, has sex with an 11-year-old, is going to be punished.
But you're not there.
Severely, because wasn't he prepared to agree to 12 years, 7 months or something?
But that was not the sentence that he ended up receiving. He did end up receiving... An enhanced
would have been
vulnerable.
A long sentence, even if he wanted to appeal.
In this case, though, Your Honor, you do have a victim who has other factors that this court and the sentencing court
certainly did. Is it your position that he would not have pursued her had he not known about the allegations concerning the father and had the conversation with the teacher, which the teacher verified that she had...
Well, certainly when you consider, Your Honor, that he knew this child since she was 8, and the inappropriate conduct starts when she's 11 and only starts after she makes the disclosure of the inappropriate touching in the family home, that certainly gives you cause to pause. This is something...
But you didn't even argue that in the district court.
Pardon me, Your Honor?
But you didn't argue that in the district court.
I believe I did.
Too subtle.
I believe I did, Your Honor.
Okay.
I see my time is up. If the court has no further questions, we would ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berkowitz. Your time expired, but you may have an extra minute, Ms. Weaver.
I must say, Your Honors, I don't even understand the parent analogy in this case, and I would submit that the parent analogy offered by Appellee would be an even more egregious case of fraudulent deception, and that would be fraudulent deception because of a parent whom a child trusts fraudulently.
No, but she has the fraud and so on occurring after the abduction.
Right, and that is also something that is irrelevant to the case at bar because what they're arguing is that there was some flattery here, but then the fact shifts because what happened was that they spent time together, and then we go through a whole series, and I won't use up my minute with that, but it's in the facts about how the victim here called him repeatedly, day in, day out, and a couple times.
Well, we're not going to damn her by her conduct.
Right, but the issue also is that in Romero, where this court upheld an abduction enhancement, there was expert psychological testimony to the effect that the defendant employed an elaborate scheme or pattern designed to seduce. And
why couldn't that be the label placed upon the protracted contact here? I mean, whether you might do it or I might, we have a district judge viewing videotapes and listening to whatever he heard, and that's his conclusion.
Okay.
And what's our standard
and
of review?
The clear error.
Right.
Yes. However, I submit that as a matter of law, what the evidence is here, spending a considerable amount of time treating the victim special, telling her that he's not a virgin and saying he wants to kiss her, her using foul language, these are the things the trial judge listed and that the appellant failed to reprimand her, and that she talked about having sex and he failed to discourage her. As a matter of law, we don't even reach clear error, as a matter of law, those factors do not constitute flattery or fraudulent deception. That spending time...
Could they in any case?
I would submit...
Let's just speak abstractly. Could those labels, after a judge, he or she heard the facts of a particular case, put those labels on a case and come to that conclusion? That in that case, it constituted inveigling. Or fraud?
I would say the answer is no. And in addition, in this case, we have the expert psychological testimony reports of both parties, which speak to the opposite of Romero, that there was no fraudulent scheme or pattern. These were his genuine feelings. He was going to have a future with her. So it wasn't like the parent. He took the person across state lines.
What if the judge discounted that and instead, in viewing the tapes, made his, in this case, an independent assessment to justify the conclusion he reached on the enhancement?
Okay, first of all, the judge's assessment of the tapes was wrong. I believe he said that he didn't video other students, and apparently he did video whoever was in his apartment that time. But the tapes were for no different than tapes that two people that are enamored with one another may make at any point in time. There's no fraudulent, no ulterior motives in this case.
Well,
he did it because he liked her and enjoyed her.
The judge could make a credibility assessment off of those tapes?
He certainly
did. That in this case, another case, that it did constitute a fraud, even though in another case it might not.
I think that Judge Lozano's findings with regard to the videotapes was clear error. He made he misspoke, and it's even in the government's brief that the other students, everyone who was there was videotaped, and I would draw no. I didn't raise that in my argument because I don't think that helps or hurts either party. I think it's just a fact that's out there. As Your Honor appropriately pointed out, we're getting four enhancements here for age. We're saying she's vulnerable because she's 11. There's nothing special about this victim. Under Williams' case, it has to be some unusual vulnerability that distinguishes her. And as you said, normal 11-year-olds don't usually engage in this kind of behavior. Under Williams, yeah, there might have been something somewhat unusual about her that she
didn't notice. How about knowledge of a troubled home?
Okay.
Doesn't that speak to vulnerability?
I think the only evidence before this court was the allegation of a one-time touching, and it was dubious. And the appellant reacted appropriately, called in the mother, the father, reported it to a female teacher to have her discuss it with the victim. I submit that there's no evidence. There was no expert, there was no testimony before the lower court that linked that incident, as Your Honor appropriately pointed out, with the appellant's actions here. He had this attraction to her, perverse as it were, and there's no evidence linking the fact that this incident, this reporting of this dubious touching, caused him to accelerate or anything like that. This all occurred over 4 months.
It aided him in being an authority figure, did it not? I mean,
well, he received an enhancement for that, which we didn't dispute, for being in a position of trust. But the fact that he gave her notes for being late or whatever, that is not fraudulent deception. He was the principal. He gave her a note as the principal, not as being sick or as being anything else. He was what he was, perverted, bizarre, what all the reports say he was, but there was no fraudulent deception, and to uphold the lower court would be to grant an automatic enhancement for abduction.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Berkowitz. The case is taken under